This week on the BOAG World Podcast, we talk about Adobe's attempt to fleece us, being underappreciated, and creating an awesome company culture.
I'm feeling nervous.
Because you're going to be on the telly, or you've been on the telly.
I've been on the telly.
Yes, but no one will have seen it.
No. Tonight, on the BBC, I'm going to be on the telly.
Yeah, that's quite exciting.
It's really funny. How come I can stand up quite happily in front of 800 people and not feel the slightest bit nervous, but yet I'm worrying about an interview that has already been recorded, right? So there's nothing I can do about it. And yeah, I'm worrying about that going out tonight.
That's because we'll all be laughing like
you'll
hyenas.
Be laughing your asses off. So in case you missed it, you might be able to get it by BBC iPlayer because this will come out next week, so it'll still be on iPlayer.
I wonder if they do. Do they do?
They do. News Tonight, I checked. Okay. Because, of course, I'm not going to be around to listen to it tonight.
Of course.
It is News Tonight.
Yeah.
Jeremy Paxman.
Yes.
Except I didn't. Luckily, I didn't have to talk to him.
Because he would have just said, stop being stupid, boy.
Yes. Instead, I was talking to Rory Ketland-Jones, the BBC technology correspondent, who's lovely.
Yes.
He's my new best friend.
Really?
Well, he's quite pleased. He likes me at the moment because I introduced him to if that, then this, that he'd never come across.
Ah.
And he spent his whole weekend faffing around with it, apparently.
Okay.
But anyway, yes. So that's what I've been doing.
Paul on the telly.
Obviously, nothing to do with web design.
I was going to lie for a bit then, and it's because we're about to win an Oscar for web design.
An Oscar for web design. Awesome. They call them Webbies, don't they? Is that the big one in web design?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. I don't
could
really
be.
Follow. I'm not an awards person. Some companies are really into like winning awards and stuff. We've only ever won awards
it's because
when,
it takes effort.
Yeah, we've only ever won awards when the client has put us in for them.
Yes, and we have won some good ones, but yeah,
never under our own steam.
I think that I don't know. It's just
pointless.
I think you almost have to employ someone to do it for you.
It's a bit of a racket. Because a lot of them you have to pay to enter.
Yeah, exactly. I suspect if you're viewed favourably, if you're a sponsor for the event and all this kind of thing.
Yeah, it's all a big wheeze to get money out of people.
Exactly.
So I haven't got a lot of time for awards.
Yeah.
So while being interviewed on TV, now that is...
You're on the telly, Paul.
On the
really?
Site. That, I think, really shows you've reached the pinnacle in your career.
So you can retire now?
Even though I am talking about nothing to do with web design.
What are you talking about, Paul?
Talking about wearable technology.
Okay.
I don't know anything about it. I took part... But it all came about because I took part in some research project, research study by the University of somewhere or other. I can't remember. Goldsmith University.
Goldsmith? Never heard of it. Okay. Gold,
yeah, some London one.
London
anyway.
One, okay.
And so I took part in that, and I think she realised, oh, here's a gobby git. We can put him on
Let's
telly.
Put him on the telly.
Yeah, so that's good. So I'm feeling nervous about that. I'm not a nervous person.
No.
But there you go.
What else is there to talk about?
I go to Glasgow.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
That's cool. I'm doing cool stuff. I'm doing...
Oh, you must go out to eat in the restaurant I went there to last time.
Oh, right.
Must. Can't remember what it's called.
Well, that's not a lot of use, is it?
Central Market. Yum.
So going up to talk about... We're educating stakeholders. This seems to be the new thing that we're doing.
Yes.
Lots of workshops, educating big organisations that have got lots of people that like interfering with the website. Mm. And we go up and show them... what designing websites is really like and the challenges that are around it and how you need to cut your web teams from slack. It's good, actually. I really enjoy it. So got a whole day of it tomorrow. Presentations back to back all day. And Chris is moaning about giving one. I've got three to give and he's got to give one.
Well, this is someone who won't come on the podcast because it's too scary.
Yeah, he'll stand up and do a workshop. I don't get
doesn't
that.
Doesn't want to.
Well, no, he doesn't want to, but he will.
For the same reason.
I don't understand people not wanting to be in the limelight going, look at me, look at me. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes, I'm the same.
Just strange, isn't it? Yes. So what's been going on in your world? What exciting things are you, have you been on telly recently? Just saying. Have you?
I'm probably on telly every day, Paul.
You probably are somewhere.
Somewhere.
Yeah, that's a really scary thought. I bet you are.
No, I'm not on telly every day.
You'd probably be on the radio every day somewhere.
Yes.
Because especially with these internet radios, re-churn all the old
no
crap.
No question, no question. Yes. Yes, so yeah, there you go. How do you feel now?
Very inadequate. I feel I failed in life. Well, it depends on how you look at it. Either I failed in life or your best days are behind you, one or the other.
That thought was definitely in my head because those radio plays have got nothing to do with what I do now.
No.
At all. So I am...
But that's quite impressive, Marcus. You've had two successful careers in your lifetime. Think of it that way.
Yeah, wow.
So, twice are you at the pinnacle.
Does that mean I can stop now?
No, you have to do one more, just for good luck. What are you going to do next one?
I'm
gardening,
going to
you
be,
always say.
Yes, I'm going to be I'm going to be good at growing my own vegetables.
Oh, wouldn't that be great? Start one of those little self-sufficient farm things.
Yeah.
Live the good life.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Down in Devon.
Can I do that tomorrow?
Absolutely. Well, let's sell Headscape. Anybody want to buy Headscape? If you're out there and you want to buy Headscape, lots of money with requiring nothing from us in return. That's the kind of deal that we're looking for. Facebook, if you're listening to us, you can buy us for $1 billion in the same way as you bought Instagram. That would be fine.
I reckon we could go for a bit less than that.
Although, see,
honestly, just a little bit.
Yeah, but you say that. But an American billion isn't worth that much, is it? Because their billion is worth less than an English billion.
Yeah, but the English billion doesn't really exist anymore.
Doesn't it?
We use the same.
Have we gone across to their billion?
Yes. I think maybe mathematically, the English billion is still in use.
Well, it's ridiculous. I don't understand, because the American one makes no sense to me, right? So 100 hundreds are 1,000. No, they're not. So it's actually, 10, the American one is right and we're wrong.
No, not necessarily, because 1,000 is a million. It just different.
Inconsistent.
Yeah.
I don't like inconsistency. I thought mathematicians
were
supposed
to be logical.
But 1,000
million does make sense when you're talking about money. Because a million million is just nuts.
Silly amounts of money.
Exactly.
Nobody would be able to say they're
so
a billionaire, and
so
that would be sad.
From a financial point of view, 1,000 million makes a lot more sense.
I could settle for 1,000 million.
That is a billion.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I could settle for that.
Yeah.
How do you calculate how much? It's a really interesting question.
Yeah,
how do
you
calculate
how much Instagram was worth?
Well, not Instagram.
Seriously,
yeah,
I'd like to know.
Facebook bought Instagram because Instagram were a threat to what Facebook wanted to do. So that was they bought them to get them out of the way, to remove the competition.
Yeah.
And because if they hadn't bought them, Google or someone else would have bought them. It's all these kinds of, you know,
and they didn't pay $1 billion for them, did they?
Not in cash, no. But no, what I'm quite interested in is how do you... Because there's very specific kind of ways that you calculate how much some companies are worth.
Mm-hmm.
But with a service-based business, if somebody bought Headscape, how on earth would you work out how much it's worth?
Well, you hear differing stories on this. Some people will say the most negative or the smallest measure is last year's turnover.
Right.
So
£2.50.
£2.50. No, turnover, though. Not.
Oh, so £5.
Yeah, not profit.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I've heard that go as high as three times last year's turnover. But it's to do with your turnover, basically.
But the trouble is with buying a service business, is it's so reliant on the people behind it.
Yeah, and there's also your client list. That's
right.
What people are buying. And also you may be a threat.
Yes.
That's the other one.
So we need to be threatening.
Threatening. Yes. Very threatening.
Yeah, Facebook, we're going to take you down.
So
somehow.
Yes, it's a lot more difficult to quantify than are we going to buy your product.
Ah, it's interesting.
But yeah. But yeah, we are for sale always. To the right buyer, obviously.
Yeah, because we're about a lifestyle business, which is selling up and sitting on a beach.
Exactly, running away and leaving everyone here.
Yeah, that's quite the opposite, actually. But anyway, so how did we get onto that subject? I've no idea.
Don't know.
Should we talk about web design stuff? I've noticed I've become formulaic. I always say, should we talk about web design stuff now? And then we move on to the next section.
I could have told you that about 5 years ago, because I've been editing these for long 88 years.
Right, we'll cut out that comment when you edit it this week.
No.
Oh, don't want to be different. Can we do it again?
No.
Let's talk about jelly.
And I don't really like jelly.
Don't you?
No.
Why not?
And there's one of that, and
jelly and ice cream.
I don't really like when it comes to food is a very rare saying for me.
Yeah.
But jelly's a bit kind of like yeah.
If you put jelly and ice cream, I'm still like a 5 year old. I like going to birthday parties and eating jelly and ice cream.
Because I really like trifle, but not if you put jelly in it.
But how can you have trifle without jelly in?
Proper trifle doesn't have jelly in it.
That's
and it's not
weird.
A snobby thing, it just doesn't taste right.
Just
even
strange.
Though I can be a bit snobby about something.
You're snobby about anything, food or alcohol, you get snobby about, and music, obviously. Web design, you'll let any old shit go
absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely, any old crap.
So our first question, do you recognise the name Drew Rothman?
Yes, and I don't know where from.
Ah, think back. Think back quite a long way to the intersection of your second career and your first career. There's a clue.
Really?
Yeah. There was a moment where your two careers, your pop career and your web design career, collided in a great and spectacular moment produced by Drew Rothman. That's really giving it away.
Nope.
Do you remember Hans de Boag?
Oh, yeah.
He wrote Hans de Boag World.
There you go.
I'll put a link in the show notes if I can find it. I don't even know where it is anymore. But it was basically what Drew. I mean, it's brilliant. If you didn't hear it, so Drew wrote took Marcus's greatest hit from his web design career, his pop star career, which was Hands to Heaven, and created a parody of it, which was Hands to Boag World, which was all about CSS and web standards because it was when we were proclaiming web standards when not everybody was doing it. So it's very, very good, very worth listening to. And the fascinating thing about Drew is apparently he's got this amazing ability to mimic. And you can see why when you listen to this question. It is quite incredible. All right, let's listen to his question. You'll see what I mean.
Hello, Paul. Hello, Marcus. This is Drew calling with a response to your plea for audio questions as well as your challenge to give you my best English accent. Hopefully I'm not embarrassing myself too badly. Probably just copying somebody from Harry Potter. Anyway, what I wanted to do was not so much ask you a question, really, but get your opinion on Adobe's move to the cloud. I don't think I've heard you discuss it very much on the podcast, if at all. I think it's an interesting topic, and I'd like to know what you think as far as how it affects Headscape and how you think it affects the design industry in general. For the listeners who aren't familiar, after Adobe CS6, Adobe will no longer be creating a sellable software. They'll only be renting it. So whereas before I could pay $850 and use Adobe CS forever, now I would have to pay $50 a month for the same software. And of course, going along with that, if I stop paying, then I wouldn't be able to edit any of my files anymore, because I don't have the version of the software I created them with. And furthermore, for people like me who don't buy the updates very often and who largely do work for clients who aren't paying me very much or aren't paying me at all, non-profits and pro bono work and volunteer jobs and things like that, I would probably simply have to stop doing it if I didn't already own a license for CS5. So I'm curious as to whether you think this creates any sort of barriers to entry for new designers, whether you think this raises the bottom line for agencies like yours that, you know, may have several Adobe products that you'd need to keep up to date, that sort of thing. Looking forward to hearing your response. Cheers. And I'll just drop the accent and say thanks for doing a great podcast and look forward to hearing more. Take it easy, guys. Bye.
So when he dropped the accent, he sounded fake to me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like me putting on an American accent.
Yeah, it was really bizarre. He did,
the odd word, wasn't
the
it?
Odd word went Australian, didn't it? Yeah. But other than that, that was really quite an impressive accent.
He sounded just like somebody who would work for a London agency.
Yes, he did.
Yes,
with the public school upbringing.
A bit public school, a bit kind of like, you know, I'm taking the jag out of the weekend.
Yes, absolutely. No, I was really impressed. He's definitely
opened for the club on the weekend, made 120, not out.
But I was totally taken in. Yes. So it's really good. So superb. No wonder he was able to create such a good parody of Hands to Heaven. He's obviously got a natural gifting in that area.
Fantastic. Yeah, well, actually, he sounds better English than he does American.
Oh, much better. Yes. Much more acceptable. He doesn't sound so thick, does he, when he's English?
I didn't say that. I didn't say that, Paul. I said that.
I don't care. I'm not afraid.
No, I think some American accents are fine. It's just his American accent was really strong.
But I think
maybe he was overdoing it.
Yeah, he must have been overdoing it. And I think he was possibly. It was also the massive contrast of suddenly going from English into American. So I don't want to talk about his question. I just wanted to play back his audio, really. No, it's a good question, isn't it?
I didn't realise.
Oh, right. What didn't you realise?
I didn't realise that it was an either or.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was like you can rent it or you can buy it.
It was for a little while.
But you can't buy it.
No.
Bastards.
Well.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Absolutely. We don't all want to have the latest thing all the time. You just want to buy something for. Maybe if you were just somebody who just wanted to potter about doing web design-y stuff, or even print design-y stuff,
talking
about here,
yeah.
Then you just buy it and use that one for 10 years, and then maybe use the other one.
Well, yes and no, right? Here's my feelings on the subject. First of all, is there are, for the amateur, he was talking about people that did pro bono or charity work, and, you know, the low end of the spectrum. To be frank, there are a lot of very, very good pieces of software out there that are not Adobe.
That's the other thing.
That are damn cheap. You know, Pixmator, you know, things like Coda. There's all these kinds of great products. Link in the show notes
to
maybe a few of them.
Yes.
So there are some alternatives that are priced for that audience. The truth is, up until this point, that audience have been pirating Adobe software. Let's be honest about it. Students, people like that, they've just been pirating the software. And I did the same when I was, you know, that kind of point in my career. And I can understand Adobe reacting to that.
I didn't. That I'm a good example. I don't use Photoshop anymore.
No.
What I used to use was, I don't know, I can't remember what they were called, the previous versions. I don't know, 7.
Yeah.
Say. I had that for 2 or 3 years, and that was fine for what I needed it for. And then things like Pixelmator come along, and I just replaced them with that.
But that was because Headscape bought those licenses. You didn't pay for those licenses.
Correct.
There's no way you would have paid 400 quid for a piece of graphics software that you used once in a blue moon.
I agree, but Headscape paying for it for me was fine. But $50 a month for me, pointless.
It makes no, because I think ultimately it probably works out cheaper.
No, but for me,
I mean for you. Right? Let's think about it for a minute. You probably use Photoshop, I don't know, once every few months you open something that needs Photoshop rather than something like Pixelmator. Less than that, maybe. Right. So instead of having to buy a license at 300, 400 quid, you just get 1 month's worth of subscription at 50 quid.
Okay.
And then you turn it off again. And he was talking about, oh, yeah, but what about situations where the client, you know, you do some work for a client, you build it, and then they come back to you loads later. So you just get a 1 month license for it. Mm. You don't have to continually pay for this license month in and month out when you're not working. For someone starting out in freelancing that maybe is doing a bit in the evenings, they can, you know, if they get a project in, they add $50 onto the cost of the project for the month that they need that bit of software for.
What's stopping people pirating this, though, still?
I don't know, because I don't understand enough about how it works. But it's calling back to the server a lot more often, so it is much harder. There will be, people will find ways around it. I'm sure they will. But it's just a change in business model that Adobe have gone for. And for something like Headscape, it actually makes a lot of sense, because the problem that we have, you know, we've got not actually that many people that need it now, but, you know, at one stage we maybe probably had 6 people that needed, you know, Adobe licenses. And we had a problem whereby, the new version would come out, and then we'd have to have this big debate, do we get it or don't we? Is it worth it? Is it not? And then there's a big capital outlay all of a sudden.
Yep.
This way you're spreading the cost month in, month out. You always get the latest thing. It's a predictable cost. If you're starting out as a freelancer, you don't have to suddenly find maybe a couple of grand up front when you first start to, you know, in a big lump sum, you're just paying an ongoing amount. And furthermore, is there's always the issue where, for example, I use, you know, as a designer, I used to use Photoshop day in and day out. It was my workhorse. Mm. Occasionally, I'd want Illustrator, right? So, and occasionally at that time, I'd want Flash. And so do I have to buy licenses for those when I only want them once in a blue moon? Actually, I think this model, which means that I could download whatever software I needed. You know, there's Adobe, the audio programs that Adobe have got are all there on the rare occasions that I need them, or Premiere on the rare occasions that I need them. So actually, I think I like the idea. Have I convinced you? Because you were totally against it when we started this conversation.
No, I wasn't.
You were. You called them bastards.
For not giving people the choice. I'm not saying it's not right for some people.
Right.
And I still don't think it's right for everyone.
Yeah, I don't. I have to say, I don't know why they chose to do that.
However, as you quite rightly pointed out, there are alternatives. So actually, it's not that big an issue.
I don't think it is. I mean, there's some really, you know, there's much better coding environments, definitely. Pixelmator will do, as you say, the majority of stuff that you
need
to do.
The only thing it struggles with for me is if you need to do anything with text.
Right, it's a bit crap rubbish. On that, is it?
Yeah.
But they'll step up to the mark on that. Now, Lee found a really good piece of software recently.
Lee uses Fireworks anyway.
Well, yeah, but that's Adobe.
Ah, see, it's all been bought out by Adobe.
Yeah, that is the problem, is that they buy out. Now, Lee was found a new vector thing that he was moving away even from Fireworks. And I can't remember what it was. Let me see if I can find it. I think it was something called Sprite, maybe, or I can't remember. Any Evernote Fireworks. Let's see whether... Aha! He's moving to something called Sketch, which I've never come across, actually. So we'll put a link in the show notes to Sketch. So that's his alternative to Fireworks now. So that's very interesting. I wonder if that's the designer's toolbox. This looks like it might be it. Ah, designer's toolbox. A sketch for a professional vector graphics app with beautiful interface and powerful tools. So, I mean, there's some great apps out there. Oh, yeah, this looks like the kind of thing.
What does it cost?
That's a very good question. It's a free trial.
We used to do a show like this.
Or on the Macs. Yeah, we did, didn't we? Let's have a look. It's on the Mac store. So it's only Mac orientated.
Oh, it's on the Mac store.
£50.
So a little bit more than Pixelmator, which I think is 36.
But still, even still, that's...
£50?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, anyone who's interested would be probably, apart from maybe a student, would be interested in that.
And students are going to pirate whatever. You know, let's be honest about it.
Statements.
Yeah. But so I actually think, if they'd done this 6 years ago, it would have been more of a stitch-up.
Yeah.
But I think that the industry has shifted. Now, if I was a print designer, I might...
Now I've got Sketch here at $34.99.
Oh, that's different. Oh, perhaps my...
Graphics and design, yeah? Sketch, graphics and Sketch 2.
Ah.
$34.99.
What's going on there?
Sketch is a designer's
tool. It took me to the Mac version. That was $49.99. And of course, you're seeing the, £34.99.
Exactly the same price as Pixelmator, then, I believe.
Yeah. So there we go.
That's interesting.
It is. I might check that out myself.
I wonder if Lee bought that on Headscape.
Why? Because obviously we would buy separate licenses.
Obviously we would, wouldn't we? Yes.
So, Yeah, whether I'd feel the same if I was a print designer, because perhaps there aren't as good alternatives, I don't know. Or if you're a photo... No, I know that there are good options if you're a photographer. But certainly for web designers, I don't think it's that big a deal.
Okay.
Personally. Should we move on to another question? Do you want to read this one out?
This is from Brad Gill.
Brad Gill.
We're assuming Brad's American.
Gotta be, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ah, yes, he says so in the first
sentence. Yes, here we go. I work for a large charity here in the US. Doesn't make him American.
No, he could be Italian, living in America.
Yes. With a name like Brad Gill.
Yeah.
Okay, the challenge I face is that I am viewed as somebody whose job it is to... Start again.
Sorry, Brad. I apologise for the...
The challenge I face is that I am viewed as somebody whose job is just to implement the ideas of others. I am fed up building what I know are bad ideas because those above me just don't get the web. What can I do about this, or should I just leave and get a job with an agency like Headscape?
Good question. We deal with this...
Leave.
Oh, Marcus. We deal with this kind of thing all the time, isn't it? This is the kind of staple of what we spend most of our lives helping internal web teams deal with.
It's true, yeah, because...
I think a lot of it is that a lot of web teams are born out of IT.
Mm-hmm.
And IT is seen as a service department.
Yes.
You go, you know, they service the rest of the business.
But then IT probably suffer the same issue as well. They probably say, you know... they probably feel it should be their job to implement a new CRM or something like that. It should come from them.
Yeah, probably.
You know, because we're not just a service department. We should be making recommendations on types of systems and that kind of thing. So, yeah, same thing.
So
therefore, your argument doesn't fit.
I think, no, it does fit, it still applies, that's why people perceive web teams in that way. It doesn't mean that, I'm saying that it shouldn't remain like that, and perhaps it shouldn't with IT either. Who knows?
I mean, I think, and it probably in IT's case, they have, what we're currently going through, and where we're slowly getting to on this, is we're trying to empower web teams and make them more in control of their own destiny.
We were talking about that only this morning, weren't we? Creating a responsibility assignment matrix.
Indeed.
Which is a fancy way of saying, look, let the web team get on with it.
Yes, exactly. And I also think that there's an issue, and this still exists, in that senior management in pretty much anywhere still sees the web as something that their little nephew does.
Yes.
You know?
I
guess... That's a bit unfair, particularly that's not the case in anywhere that sells stuff online. They will certainly appreciate it if they're making lots of money from their website.
Yes, that helps.
But if they're not, I suspect it's always seen as a bit like, oh, well, we're going to do the new brand and the new brochures. Oh, and you need to make sure somebody in the web team does something. That kind of lack of... representation at high levels as well, mm-hmm. I think, is part of the problem.
So far we've agreed with Brad that this is a problem, but we have offered him nothing way of solutions.
Hire Headscape.
How do we... Okay, so what is it, if you, let's say, we'll presume that he doesn't have the authority to hire Headscape, right? So what do we do when we go in to address this problem?
We do stakeholder interviews. That's a really important thing we do. Well, actually, the first thing we do is do a review of what they've got to highlight all the stuff that's wrong,
mm-hmm.
And make some recommendations about how that might be fixed. And probably as part of those recommendations, we talk about responsibilities, about getting these things done. You know, you often do these reviews. You talk about the boom and bust cycle. And how to avoid that. And if you're not doing boom and bust, i.e. lots of investment, new wonderful thing, everyone, senior management is involved, and they sign off and then everyone forgets about it.
Yeah.
If that's not going to happen, and everyone will agree with you, if you say, we shouldn't be doing this, everyone at senior management, you're absolutely right, yes, dead right. To support that, you've got to empower the team who's looking after it.
Right.
Yeah.
So... Brad, there is nothing to stop Brad choosing to write a document like that, even if he's a junior nothing.
Correct.
Right.
Exactly. He probably should get... He should try... That's a good point, actually. Sorry, I'm thinking out loud here. It would be really, really helpful if he can get a supporter at senior level.
Yes.
I think we've got... So, basically, I'm being Brad. I think we've got a problem, Mr. Senior Person, with the website. It's not serving the organisation as well as it could be. I've got a lot of ideas about how we could improve it. Will you support me in talking to the rest of the company about what our requirements are, how we could do things better?
But do you think Brad needs to take a document to Mr. Senior Manager?
Depends how friendly they are.
Right.
If he could get somebody on board before that, then
even better.
Even better.
But I think the key there is not to just...
And when I say senior, I mean if you can get the CEO or whatever.
But then a lot of people that are you know, we're making a presumption about Brad that he's at the bottom of the heap. Poor old Brad.
Well, no, but he did say that he's being viewed as just an implementer.
Yes. So it's going to be quite hard for him to get the attention of a CEO, depending on the size of the company.
Yeah, true.
You know, but I think that the key there is to talk about... to not just go, there's a problem with the web, you've got to offer solutions. Mm. That's the key thing. And another aspect of it, I think, is the other thing that we do is, again, what I was talking about at the beginning of this show, this idea of we're spending a lot of time now doing stakeholder education.
Yes.
I'm running training sessions, you know, and I'm going to write about this. I'm going to blog about this a little bit more. But essentially, we do, you know... Like tomorrow, I'm running 3 presentations and Chris is doing a 4th. So we're looking at an introduction to analytics.
Shouldn't Chris be doing 2 and you be doing 2?
I think that would be only fair.
Wouldn't that be fair?
It would be fair.
I think you should dump one of yours briefly on him, like with 5 minutes before.
Yeah, I think he'd like that. Because he's always so helpful in situations like that.
I've interrupted Paul mid-counting. Yes. It's always funny.
So we're doing an analytics workshop. So basically sitting down with a load of stakeholders and say, okay, so let's look at what you can do with analytics. Let's see what we can discover about our website through analytics.
Yes.
Right? So that's one thing we're doing. We're doing an introduction to wireframing. Okay, so this is how you make decisions about wireframing. You set your business objectives, you set your users' needs, and do a whole series of exercises around that, which gets the stakeholders kind of thinking in the right way, but also
about priorities,
but also helps to show you as the expert. That's the other reason for doing these. Mm. Get them thinking in the right way, build up your own expertise. Mm-hmm. What else am I doing? I'm doing writing for the web one,
yep.
Which is another area where people need a lot of help. So that's another area, and I'm doing something else.
No, that's 3 for you. The other
there's 4 in total, 3 for me, 1 for Chris, but I can't remember what the other one is. Let's try to find out. Let's see what it is. I really should know this. That's quite terrible that I don't, but I can't.
While Paul's looking, Brad, you may be thinking, oh, horror of all horrors. I can't stand up in front of people doing something like
that's
this.
That's a fair comment.
But you could write a document covering... analyzing stats with real examples, very important.
The other one I was doing was on navigation.
Okay.
But, you know, it's essentially to start the conversation, start educating and establish yourself as experts. You're right, Marcus. You could record a video. You could write a document. You could do a weekly newsletter that covers different things. You could do a workshop, do an internal podcast even. There are lots of ways of essentially starting to educate people in the company and spread good practice about web design.
Yes.
Even if you're just referring to other people, what other people have written, you know, if you're sending around people, hey, check out this brilliant article on boagworld.com. You know, you're showing your knowledge and that you're well read, and you're also kind of educating people in the company about best practice as well. What other things do we do? Lots of reviewy type stuff.
Getting your user's opinion.
Yes, user testing is a brilliant way. Mm. And there, you know, there are some great apps out there that make that very cheap and very easy. You can use things like Verify app, link in the show notes to that one, which allow you to test different design concepts. So if a client comes back to you with a ridiculous idea, by all means, mock it up and then test it on Verify. And then there's usertesting.com, which is remote user testing. A link in the show notes, really cheap, really easy to do, and really highlights stupid ideas very well. So testing is another great thing.
Yeah, or running surveys.
Surveys, yeah, I forgot surveys. That's great. I found out that Google have got a really good survey tool, link in the show notes to that, which is really annoying because I've been looking for a good survey tool for ages and I'm currently spending a lot of money on one that's nowhere near as good. But there you go. Consumer surveys, Google consumer surveys. Mm. I haven't had a proper look at it, to be honest. It might be rubbish, really, but it looks good. On the surface, it looks good. So yes, lots of things you can do, Brad. I think.
I was going to say one more thing that I think it would be worth it if you feel, and I would have thought within a charity you'd get people willing to give you the time, which is to interview people using a script.
Yes.
Therefore, you're asking the same question of everyone.
Yeah.
I've been through stakeholder interviews before.
Yeah.
Not wanting to sound too manipulative, but you can, if you are, I can't remember the example I just gave, but if you ask people logical questions, mm-hmm. they will all go, yes, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Even if what the reality is that that's not happening. Yeah. So it's quite easy to get a lot of people to say, yeah, sure, we should be doing that.
Yeah.
And then you can say it when you summarize all of these interviews, you go, every single person I interviewed said we should be making the website red. I don't know. I'm making it up. So then you've got all of the senior managers' opinions. And you've asked them all the same question. They've all answered it in the positive. So therefore, you've got a big mandate to move forward.
Now, you might be sitting thinking, Brad, A, I don't have the time for all of this. And B, this all sounds scary. And this is where we kind of get to the real truth of the matter, which is that it takes you to be proactive. It takes you to stand up and say something and do something. And maybe you need to do this in the evenings to make it happen. Maybe you do need to risk your job over it, to be quite frank, of you know, being proactive. Although in my experience, there's very few managers that don't like you to be proactive, as long as you don't go over people's heads. That's where people get particularly snipey. So actually, I think, you know, bite the bullet and go for it. Start doing stuff. Start taking control of your destiny and where you stand within the company. Because when you start behaving in a certain way, people will start treating you in a certain way. You know, from a personal perspective, when I go into companies, I've got no right particularly to speak on some of these subjects that I speak on. But if I speak with confidence and I go for it, then most of the time I can con people into believing that I know what I'm doing.
So, and with that, you can hire Headscape.
but a lot of times...
Do you know it's actually true?
No. What I was going to say, take this morning, for example, I joked with you, didn't I, about you wanted some help with this responsibility assignment matrix. And I joked with you, you need someone to make some decisions for you. And you went, yeah, I do. And I think that in a lot of companies, that's what they need. They need someone willing to step up and say, look, everyone sits there and goes, oh, this is rubbish.
Yeah, exactly,
we need to change. But somebody needs to step up and say, okay, yes, this is rubbish and this is what we can do about it.
Yep.
And you might not feel you've got the authority to do that, but if you start talking, well, we could do this, you're not going to get fired for going, well, we could do this. You know, have the guts, have the gumption and go for it. Because to be honest, and I'm really getting ranty now and I apologize, Brad, but if you are not the kind of person that can't step up and take authority and to go for it and put in the extra mile to make it happen, if you leave that company and go for work for an agency, you're going to fail. Because people that work, you know, an agency is a very fast-paced organization where you do need to take responsibility for yourself and your own actions, and you will be pushed in that regard. So you need to learn to do that internally within an organization, or you need to move to a different organization rather than go to an agency. Am I sounding really dogmatic now?
Yes.
Do you disagree with me?
Yes.
You do?
On that one, yeah. I think that... you don't have to be a decision maker, a go-getter, to be a good front-end developer or a good server-side developer in an agency.
No, yes, okay, but you do need to be proactive.
Yeah.
And you do need to take responsibility.
Yes.
So?
That's different.
Okay, maybe it is. Fair enough. But yes, but then hopefully we've given you some practical advice beyond my random ranting.
Yes.
So should we move on to the next question, as me and Marcus disagree?
See if I can do this one a bit better than the last one.
I should hope so.
Stefan Reichert, Reichert, must be. What are you doing to hire new talents and keep the good talents at Headscape? And then company culture written in brackets next to it, but I don't suspect that was part of the question.
I didn't write that, so it must have been part of the question. What are we? I mean, I feel slightly dodgy about talking about this. What if we don't have what do our staff think? Perhaps we don't have a good company culture.
None at all, no.
I'm beeping, am I?
Beep noises.
Sorry.
In my ears.
Sorry.
We don't do anything at all. We make them come in at 6 a.m. and they have to work till midnight. They get one day's holiday a year.
Ha ha. So let's talk about it sensibly. Right, so what's the question? What are you doing to hire new talent and keep good talent at Headscape? Okay. First of all, it's about establishing a culture, isn't it? What is your company culture? What do you stand for and what don't you stand for? Would you say that's a fair starting point. Will you stop talking to your wife?
She's got burgers for later.
So unprofessional. So unprofessional.
Yum.
So I can tell you're totally distracted in this subject. Because I thought you'd have a lot to say on this subject. Because you actually...
What are we talking about?
Because you're actually quite into this kind of company culture and creating the right kind of business.
Yeah, you're not. Just...
Oh, what? They ought to get on and do some bloody work, I think. They all doss around far too much, in my opinion. So decide what your company culture is. So in our case, it's we wanted a lifestyle business. So we want to create a company which facilitates us and our employees' lifestyle. So that is one way that we keep good talent. Great example of that is Ed. The email Ed sent round this morning, right? So he's not working for the next couple of days between 10:30 and 1:30 because he wants to watch the rugby, right?
Yeah.
And so he's making that. I can hear him laughing downstairs about it. So he's making up that time in the evening. So it's being flexible and giving your employees flexibility is one part of it.
Yeah.
And trust.
You've got to
well.
Be careful with that. If you do, we've learned over the years that you can make mistakes. We basically want to be really kind of easygoing about things.
Yes.
But some people take the piss, frankly, yes. And you have to be wary of who you employ. I remember talking to, what's his name, Dan at Silver Orange, anyway.
Oh, Dan James at Silver Orange, link in the show notes.
About a similar, and they take a year to employ someone.
Yes.
And it's like, yeah, okay, lesson learned.
Well, yeah. But, yeah, and we have made mistakes. But for example, I know that Ed talked to Pete about that, and that was the result of it. Because originally Ed said, well, I want to take a whole day's holiday, which was actually more of a pain than him just taking, you know, the odd hours here and there.
Exactly.
So I think it's about flexibility, trust mm-hmm. is the other thing, trusting your employees to get the job done.
Yep.
What else is big? Rewarding them when you're rewarded. So we, in the past, we used to give bonuses a lot. To be frank, the economic climate hasn't been as great, so we haven't been able to do that for a while. But we've just given all our staff iPad minis as a kind of thank you for your effort. So those kinds of rewards from time to time help.
But, I mean, in our case, we've deliberately never made anything performance-related.
No.
If we're doing well, then everyone does. Then I mean, we have occasionally given extra bonuses, but it's all very much based on what we think is appropriate.
Yes.
You won't get 10% of this if you do.
No, there's no set. It's all discretionary so that people don't come to expect it.
Well, and also, and it then becomes a big competition.
Yes.
Which is not what we want.
No, it creates the wrong kind of atmosphere.
Yeah.
Sometimes with company culture, you need to take the opposite approach of what we've already said, which is that sometimes you have to know when to enforce something. Mm-hmm. So a good example of that was Squiggle recently. So we've just adopted a new technology called Squiggle, link in the show notes, which we're using as our primary communication tool, which shows little pictures of everybody. And you can click on a picture and just start talking with people. So it's a bit like Google Hangouts. But much more instant than that. You don't have to ring people or anything like that. And this was something we felt would really help company culture because we're so spread out all over the place. But we knew some employees wouldn't like it. And so we've kind of had to enforce that. So sometimes it's not all about being big, fluffy and lovely. It is, you know, there is the other side to it as well.
It does have the advantage that you can cook your breakfast on your laptop.
Yeah, because it superheats it. Absolutely, yeah. They're working on that. Cut them some slack.
Daily moan on that one.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but it will be. I think it's marvellous. So what are we doing?
We're talking about company culture.
Keep good talents at Headscope.
Well, I mean, pay them decently.
Yes, although... of the good people who we've still got here and also the good people I've left over the years, they've usually left because they've thought, I'm going to get something more interesting somewhere else.
So type of work.
Whether they actually do or not, I don't know. But, you've got to make sure people have got interesting stuff to work on.
Yes.
And you can't guarantee what's coming through the door.
No.
And we don't work in the most exciting sectors.
No, we don't. So that is a slight problem. We try and make projects exciting.
Yeah.
Like, there's normally something in it.
But I think because we know that and because we do tend to do a lot of very complex, very kind of in-depth projects, we try and keep the good talent here by being a really kind of nice place to work.
Yeah.
And we think it is, because we want it to be a nice place to work for us.
But what he's getting at is what makes it a nice place to work. Just saying it's making it a nice place to work, that's very woolly. What is it? It's the working from home. It's the flexible hours. It's the nice rewards. It's going out to the pub together.
Nice office.
It's nice office. It's that kind of stuff, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, if this was a big sales culture, it would be about the car you drove or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's not. That doesn't kind of work for us.
No.
It's about cool kit, nice place to work, being able to work, being able to sort of go, all right, if I don't come until midday today, but I'll make the time up later and that's an eyelid. Yeah, that kind of easygoing nature of the place.
But after saying all that, Stefan, I think it's fair to say that our sector does have a relatively high turnover of staff. I mean, we've been quite lucky, but as a sector as a whole, people do move on relatively quickly. And I think that's another aspect to take into account. I love the people that have kind of stuck with us from the beginning, you know, the kind of Chris and Lees that have been here forever and will be here forever. You know, you kind of know that they're invested in us. But equally, there are other people that come in who, you know, were a stepping stone. And I'm okay with that. And I actually think part of providing a good company culture is to nurture people into the next step. Rob Borley was a great example of that.
Yeah.
You know, it was obvious that we kind of nurtured him up almost straight out of university, not quite, but fairly off of that. And it became relatively obvious, not, you know, a fair while ago, that he was an entrepreneur, that he would go on and set up his own company.
Mm.
And that's cool and that's good. And we were able to support him and help him to the point of doing that. And although it always feels weird when someone actually does do it, that's a part of it. For, you know, I think another part of keeping good staff is to recognize that you have to support their long-term career, and their long-term career might not always be with you. So
yeah.
Part of keeping staff is actually be willing to let them go, bizarrely.
Yeah, I'd never quite thought of it like that. But yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, we've always accepted that people aren't going to hang around forever. I mean, some people have.
Yeah, quite a lot have, actually. Yeah, yeah. But
I think particularly the youngest people that we've employed, you kind of know that.
Yeah. They don't know how good they've got it here. That's the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they all worked elsewhere. I actually kind of semi-mean that, you know, because I think it is true to some regards.
But as far as new hires, the other part of the question, I mean, that depends on who, on the type of person. And, you know, we're not looking to hire new people very often. It would be the honest answer to that.
And we're trying. Rare. Yeah. And we have learnt our lesson not to rush into it. So, I mean, classic example at the moment, we're hiring a junior consultant. I don't know whether the word junior has done us any good, actually, in advertising for that position. Mm. But we're trying to get somebody that's moving into consultancy for the first time. You know, maybe they've got a good track record in design and development and moving across into a consultancy. So link in the show notes to that job. But I've got no desire to hurry that appointment. I want to get it right.
Mm.
You know, we've been... So taking your time is a really big one. In terms of how you kind of encourage people to join you... is sit down with them face to face. Because to be quite frank, if they, after sitting and having a chat with us, if they don't want to join us, we don't really want them to join us because it's probably a bad match.
Exactly.
You know, because if they don't like us very much, and if they don't, in fact, not even if they don't like us very much, if they don't like us so much that they're desperate to work with us, then I don't think we really want to work with them. It's a weird thing to say. It's easy to talk like this when you've not got pressure on you to actually hire someone tomorrow.
Oh, we've had that, yeah.
And we've made that mistake of feeling like we've had to expand to meet client demand. But you sometimes need to decide, I'm willing. This is the new realization to us, to be honest, isn't it?
Mm.
In the last, you know, couple of months, few months, we've decided, look, we don't want to grow massively bigger. We need to get used to turning away people and saying, no, we can't do that. No, we can't do that. No, we can't do that. And I think that is such, it's taken us 10 years to learn that lesson, but I think it's possibly one of the most valuable lessons we have or will ever learn. We still aren't very good at doing it yet. But that's certainly our goal at the moment. And as soon as you do that, it takes all the pressure off of recruitment, so you can be much more fussy over who you recruit, but also you can be much more fussy about the work you take on, which means your staff get much more interesting work to do.
Mm.
You know, so there is a big benefit, I think, to staying small.
It's finding the right size, isn't it?
Yes. I mean,
some people would think we were big. If you're a 2-3 man agency,
absolutely.
They think, oh, I mean, how do you manage to feed that many males? But equally, we were...
We're
11 at the moment. We feel, well, we're looking for one more person. So it, being 12, we think, seems to be about the right size. We were yeah. 20, and it was like...
That was too big for us.
Well, it was too big because we kind of felt, there was a lot of pressure on the bottom line, you know, bringing enough work in for everybody, which kind of meant that we were focusing on sales too much
yeah.
all the time. And B, we weren't concentrating on the work that was going out the door maybe as much as we should.
Yeah, it felt like a factory.
Yeah.
And that's what...
And I think standards slipped a bit
yeah,
as well.
I would agree.
Not all the time, but the odd thing here and there.
And to be honest, I think there are points where we're actually still living with the consequences of that from a kind of development point of view, where certain things went out the door from a development point of view that maybe wasn't as hot as it should have been in hindsight.
Yeah.
So, yes, that was a really rambling answer to a very short question.
Yeah.
But it's a really interesting area and really important as well. And I don't think we're experts at it by any means. The thing I will conclude with is go and check out some of the stuff that Dan James has spoken and written on running a company, because he's got a completely different model of working.
Yeah, theirs is very radical.
Yeah.
I would use that word.
But you almost need to look at the radical
yeah.
to know it's gone too far. For us, and it kind of seeing one extreme helps to push you a little bit towards that extreme, but work out where how far you're willing to go. So, for example, just to summarize what he does, they do at their company, they're all equal partners. Mm-hmm. They all have got the same pay. The pay is all openly discussed across the company. Most decisions, you know, they have a smaller group that make the central decisions, but everything except for HR issues are published in agenda notes after their meeting, so everyone can see it and everyone can discuss it. So it's communist, basically.
It is. It's a kibbutz, isn't it?
Yes. Now, I don't think I'd be happy running my company that way, but it's really interesting to read.
They must have had some... You mentioned the word, the HR word there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a recipe for absolute nightmare.
Yeah. I mean, he's very honest about it. He's writing a post at the moment for Smashing Magazine that I'm helping him with. And he's very honest that it doesn't always work.
Well, no.
No, absolutely.
Because some people are built, you know, they have an inner ability to deal with more shit.
Yes.
And in my book, and I may be kind of shot down for this, but I think dealing with shit equals getting paid more. In my book.
Well, if on that basis, I shouldn't be paid anything. Because I just waltz around doing the stuff I like.
That's
and
so not true.
Yeah,
Paul.
I know.
No, I'm dealing with shit. That's probably not the right word. I'm being flippant. But, you know, taking on pressure is what
yes.
we're talking about here. As well as, obviously, you've got to have some skill, of course. but it's not just about skill.
Well, I mean, yeah, but this is where... Yeah. That's why we don't run the silver-orange model.
But that, what I'm saying is, how can anyone run that model? It's just
perhaps
like,
you need to get Dan back on the show to talk it through with us.
Yeah, maybe.
But, it's a fascinating area, and I think it's an area that you do, if you're running your own business, you need to put a lot of thought into it.
Mm.
It's very easy just to get swept along with the day-to-day stuff, and you do need to think strategically about what kind of company you want to be and what you want your employees to think about your company. And I think the most interesting time is when somebody leaves. And what they say about you after they've left, I think, is a good indication of how well or otherwise that you were doing. Anyway, shall we wrap up today?
Yeah, total bastards, all of them.
Shall we wrap up today's show with your newfound whopping great wadge of jokes?
Well, yeah, I haven't just newfound this. My wife, I think it's my wife, bought me a 365 hysterical jokes.
Hysterical, wow.
Hysterical.
That's really now, raising up the
I haven't
volume.
Found one hysterical one yet. for example, how do you catch a squirrel? Climb into a tree and act like a nut.
Yeah, that's not okay. Really,
so I can't. This might not be such a good idea. I brought it because I thought it would be a good thing to have on the podcast desk. But can people please send
have
me
you
some
got
more
an
jokes?
Alternative?
I have, but okay. It's of a similar level, but it did make me laugh.
Okay.
Paul, what's brown and sticky?
My poo. Sorry, I was supposed to say, Marcus, what is brown and sticky?
You're supposed to know the answer to that one.
Brown and sticky.
What's brown and sticky?
I don't
know.
This
is great that you don't know this.
It's a stick. yes.
In the similar vein, what's brown and sounds like a bell?
I don't know that
it's
one.
It's very similar to your first answer.
Dung. Dung. Oh, dear, that's terrible.
Anyway, yeah, I need some more jokes, folks.
Yeah, desperately, for the sounds of it. Did I tell you, I've recorded, over the weekend, we recorded a special edition of Boag World without you.
No.
Me and my son did one. Right. It's on the Boag World. Oh, no, it's just come off the Boag World homepage. I haven't put it on the main feed because I thought that's a bit unfair. So if people want to go and find it, you can check it out at boagworld.com and I'm sure you'll find it there. And James did a joke on the show. So you'll have to listen to it to hear his joke. It was about as good as most of
yours,
to
be
honest. He was you, yeah. Yeah. The whole show. I think the introduction to the show was on this week's podcast, we discussed the demise of Marcus, the rise of James, and the 100 or the top 10 computer games of all time. Okay. So he stood in for you. He was quite good, actually. I was quite impressed with him.
Okay, well, we'll know what to do next time.
Yeah, next time you're away on holiday or something.
About a month's time, Paul.
I know, but we're going to stop over August.
Yeah, but that's about 2 months' time.
Oh, August. Right.
I am away for a week.
Oh, yes, because we've got one where we have to record two days apart.
Or one with James.
I can do a proper web design podcast with James. All he wants to talk about is computer games and science.
Same as me, but kind of.
You at least pretend you care about what
yeah, fair enough.
Anyway, I'll put a link in the show notes to the special episode in case you want to check that out. It was just a bit of fun with me and my son. All right, thank you very much for listening, and we will talk again next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.